Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I am your host, Greg, and we have our panel of experts here today to talk.
Give me some energy here.
Well, maybe if you can give me some amnesia, I'll give you some energy, Ben. Yes, let's jump right in because the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast has some really shitty games to talk about. First up, we have back from his sabbatical, presumably with Atlanta United's CONCACAF Champions League performance. It is Ben Daniels. Ben, how's it going?
Oh, it is so good. I have watched my teams get humbled in three straight games between Atlanta United's humiliation at the hands of, I don't even know what that team is called, honestly. Herraduro? That's not a team. And then Burnley and Chelsea. It's been a terrible fucking week, man.
Well, glad we can help you talk about it to the thousands of people. Next up, we have Brian Ashlock. Brian, how's it going?
You know, my week started with such promise when on Sunday, my wife actually became interested in soccer for about 2 minutes. When Kepa refused to go off during the Carabao Cup final. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Just, she just wanted to find out about this messy bitch who loved drama.
Yeah. She was like, he can't just not leave. Right. I'm like, well, apparently he can. And then she watched him kind of screw up the penalty shootout and she was like, well, that's what you get. So that's the most interest she has shown in soccer in, I don't know, 6-7 years.
Well, that might have been well placed because we have some not great games to talk about. Let's start with
how
the one.
How are you doing, Greg?
I am.
Yeah, we never ask you how you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Finally. Finally. 4 years in, and they finally ask. I'm doing good. I'm about to travel to Europe and then Africa. So I am going to Seville and then Morocco. So that is Greg's excellent journey that is about to take place. So we'll see how that goes.
Are you going to watch any soccer while you're there?
It's Sevilla, not Seville. Come
yeah.
On.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate that.
You white bitch.
Yeah, hopefully I will be going to a Real Betis game, but they don't accept foreign credit cards, so we'll see how I navigate that situation.
So all of our listeners in Spain, they can help Greg with that.
Yeah, yeah. Any listeners in Spain who want to help me buy soccer tickets, you know, hook me up, and then when you find my, body in a gutter somewhere in Andalusia, you know, my podcast host can avenge me.
I don't think we'll be doing that.
Yeah, we will definitely not do that.
Good to know. Good talk, guys. Glad we had this talk.
Look, we're just here to be like a theoretical support system, really.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So let's talk about something slightly less cheery than my murder. It is Spurs' death at the hands of Chelsea. We lost 2-0 at Stamford Bridge today. We're recording this on Wednesday, and that was not super fun. There's a lot of places we could go with this. We could talk about how our garbage fullbacks suck and we should have replaced them 2 years ago. We could talk about how maybe Hugo Lloris needs to do a little bit better sometimes. We could talk about, is Harry Kane a problem? Let's start broad. Ben, is this game part of a pattern or was it more isolated to what we saw on the day?
I mean, you know, we've lost two games in a row now. I can't remember the last time that happened. It feels like it's been a minute. I think, you know, we have all looked at this season and been like, wow, you know, Pochettino is a miracle worker. He has held this team together with magic and duct tape. And we're playing a midfield of Moussa Sissoko and Harry Winks. We're, you know, incredibly hit by injuries. Dele Alli's been out for a while. Eric Dier, who knows what the fuck is wrong with that guy. You know, Wanyama remains dead for yet another season. Jan Vertonghen suddenly died before today. It's just like, you know, we should have probably seen this coming, where things started to fall apart a little bit, because, you know, the miracles we've been working week in, week out, are surely not sustainable. But,
well, this is the, you said it, this is the other side of a last minute winner against Burnley, when, you know, the team's being held together with duct tape. It's not, it's, you know, getting jobbed against Burnley later in the season with some bad calls from the ref and some shitty play from your defense. I mean, it's, we got this little to work with. I guess it's not surprising that things just don't work out some of the time.
Right. The story of 2019 has been unlikely late winners in games where we're not playing super well. And, you know, we're bound to lose some of those eventually. And, yeah, I guess it all came home to roost this week. I mean, we did not look good the past two games. Honestly, we looked better against Chelsea than we did against Burnley, which I don't know what to say about that. That's probably a bigger indictment than it is a compliment. But
I mean, it's worth pointing out that, I mean, Chelsea had one shot. I mean, I guess one that hit the crossbar, which so did we. One shot on target, which they scored, and then Kieran Trippier put the ball in his own net. So, I mean, unlike some games this year, it's not like we were leaking chances.
Yeah, and that's honestly the most frustrating part of it. I mean, expected goals has Chelsea and Spurs about even at, like, 0.6 goals apiece. We both teams didn't create a ton. You know, we started out pretty under the cosh. Chelsea came out strong. They pressed us high up the pitch, and we didn't deal with it very well. They created some opportunities. We weathered the storm. And, you know, the end of the first half, we created a good bit. And then it all just fell apart in the second half through mostly our own stupidity and shittiness. And that's what makes it particularly hard to take. Like, Chelsea did not outplay us. You know, they were coming off a 120-minute cup loss to Man City. Like, they should have been the team that fell apart in the second half, and instead it was us. It just sucked.
Yeah, it was not fun.
And just building off that last point of Ben's is, like, this should have been a Chelsea team that was, like, fractured or, you know, at least kind of more disjointed than they actually appeared. I know that the performance against Manchester City was good because, you know, tactically they kept things tight and didn't allow a goal over 120 minutes. But, like, the way that game ended should have been kind of a morale crusher. But instead you had, you know, Chelsea's midfield actually playing really well. You had Pedro suddenly remembering that he's a professional footballer. And I don't know. It just felt like an opportunity to really take advantage of a Chelsea team when they were down. And we just, like, instead of delivering, like, a fatal blow to them, we slipped and fell and cracked our own head open.
I mean,
I mean, they had a backup keeper who we have in our last, I think, two appearances against him have put, like, seven goals past. And today, we didn't put a single shot on target. You know, we were very much our own worst enemy here.
It's really infuriating, but I guess the problem with playing a team full of unlikable assholes who all hate each other is when one of them gets benched and causes a huge problem for the team, it doesn't cause a whole lot of disruption because they're all just as glad to see him on the bench as they are to see him on the pitch. But I fucking hate Chelsea. I don't have a question, but Brian, fuck Chelsea, right?
Yes, I also hate Chelsea. I've said on this podcast that I find the rivalry with Chelsea resonates a little bit more with me even than, like, Tottenham Arsenal, which will happen this weekend. But, yeah, no, this really sucks because, like, this is a Chelsea team that's there for the taking, and they've played, like, ass for about a month, and all of a sudden they decided they were going to be halfway decent against us, and, you know, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that kills me. It's like, you know, besides, like, you know, the expected goals of it was an even game, we had a lot of opportunities in the box where we played great balls in and, like, should have done something with it. And David Luiz and Azpilicueta and these fucking assholes, you know,
Pedro
put in, like, fucking, like, perfectly timed challenges to disrupt. Like, Christian Eriksen had the ball on his foot 6 yards out, and it got swept off of his foot by, like, a perfectly timed slide tackle. And it's just like, fuck you. I mean, it wasn't like Chelsea's defensive setup was, like, so well organized that, like, Spurs just couldn't break them down. Like, we broke them down. We got in there. And, you know, a team that is a fucking piece of shit that, again, should have been reeling from a bad cup final loss, just weren't. And, yeah. I mean, they played, like, you know, hero ball on defense, basically, and kept us from doing anything when we had opportunities to do shit. And, you know, the narrative would say that shouldn't have been happening, and it fucking was, and I want to murder David Luiz, and I hate them.
I mean, the other thing about this game is, and you know, I don't want to suggest that officiating was the reason that this game ended the way it was, because I don't think it was at all, but Andre Mariner really let this game go. Like, there was a foul right outside the box on Sun early in the game, and he just basically ignored it. Didn't wave it away that it was a dive or anything, just ignored it. And that really kind of set the tone for how he was going to officiate the rest of the match. There were fouls by both teams that were pretty egregious, and nothing got called one way or the other. And we were lucky kind of at the end that it didn't devolve into a sort of, you know, Battle of the Bridge part two.
Well, Brian, I'm glad you brought up that, because what infuriates me about this, we've all talked about how referees are cowards who are afraid to issue yellows or second yellows or whatever. But, you know, I understand in some games there's, like, an instance of, like, okay, you don't want to be, like, too – you don't want to, like, set the players on edge too early because it might affect the play of the game, and it is what it is. But, like, this isn't any game. This is not only, like, a heated derby. Like, Spurs are the team that Chelsea hates the most. It is a game that has repeated instances of racial abuse over the years, or anti-Semitic comments, whatever you want to call it, from the crowd. It is a game that, like you said, had the Battle of the Bridge a few years ago, and while not every game between Spurs and Chelsea has become a nasty physical battle since then, a lot of them have. And why, if you're a referee and you don't walk into that game approaching, like, anyone who looks at anyone else cross-eyed is getting a yellow and I'm going to set the tone early, like, I don't know what the hell you're doing. And, you know, I know, like, Eric Lamela, like, almost murdered a man today and completely got away with it unscathed, but... and that was great to watch, might be the only good thing today to watch, but I don't understand why you're a referee coming into this match and you're not setting the tone early.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, the Battle of the Bridge is a terrible precedent because, A, it has, like, this fucking cutesy nickname, oh, the Battle of the Bridge, like, it's some fucking thing. But
it was indeed a fucking thing.
Yeah, all right. But, like, I feel like, you know, because the Battle of the Bridge is the thing in, like, the public consciousness and in the referee's mind, that every game against Chelsea since then, honestly, has felt very loosely refereed, as if the Battle of the Bridge, like, set the tone for how these two teams are going to play each other. As it's like everybody has just agreed that, like, yeah, it's a testy game. What are you going to do? Let them play. And, like, no, like, you should not approach a game that way, as if, like, the history of violence somehow excuses all future violence. Like, referee the game on its own terms, and if you're doing bad tackles, those should be called for fouls and yellow cards and red cards. And I honestly believe that this narrative of the Battle of the Bridge has cast a long shadow over Spurs-Chelsea matches in excusing the kind of, like, petty violence that really has no place in the soccer game. And, you know, like, yes, like, we enjoy on some level because it's good to fucking kick Cesc Fabregas in the chin because fuck that motherfucker. But, like, It's a bad template for refereeing a soccer game.
Especially
when our three biggest shithouses in Dele Alli, Eric Dyer, and John Vertonghen are out. Like, give us a break, man.
Well, Eric Lamella played in this game, so. But
Eric Lamella's a coward. Eric Lamella has never gotten a red card for Spurs, all right? If Eric Lamella wants to be our king shithouse motherfucker, like, he needs to sack up for real and, like, just go, like, studs up to someone's fucking eyeballs. Because,
I mean, I would argue that he's been a significantly better shithouse because he doesn't get caught doing that sort of stuff. But the point,
weak as hell.
The point is that Mariner didn't issue yellow cards until the 4th minute of stoppage time, when he cards Harry Kane and David Luiz for their little tussle on the sideline. I think pretty much every Spurs Chelsea match this year, except maybe the second leg of the Carabao Cup semifinal.
Oh yeah, that was one no one actually gave a shit about. So
yeah, but the other two had first half yellow cards, and I believe in both cases multiple first half yellow cards. So you know, like, if you're refereeing Spurs Chelsea, to me the battle at the bridge and the rivalry itself, and the conduct of the players in recent matches has to inform your decision making on how you referee the game. And like Ben said, to go out there and be like, "Oh, just let them play. It's a rivalry. You know, you don't want to ruin the match early." That is the absolute wrong approach to take to it. And the actual correct approach is to impose yourself on it. Get, you know, call it tight. And make sure that players know that this level of shithousery is not going to be accepted. And then you don't wind up with, you know, Harry Kane shoulder barging David Luiz 14 times, or David Luiz kicking Harry Kane in the thigh, or, you know, Rudiger and Kane getting into it, or maybe it's Rudiger and someone else. I don't remember. But, you know, you don't wind up
with son.
Yeah. You don't wind up with that sort of stuff late in the game. Because you have, you know, put the kibosh on it early. And again, that wasn't the reason we lost.
It was infuriating to watch is what it was.
There weren't any calls that Mariner made or didn't make that impacted the way this game played. Like, that's absolutely not, you know, it's not an excuse, but like, watching it from a fan's perspective, like, control the game. Like, both sides. Not because Chelsea were dirty or because Spurs were dirty, but because it was sloppy and it was messy and you know, it could have not been that.
Well, like, so if you're a fan of baseball, there's a term that a lot of people throw around with games called the ump show, when an umpire decides to just make the game about him. He upstages players, he's a drama queen.
Joe West umpires?
Yeah, exactly. And it's awful. And I think a lot of times in any sport, when we think of bad officiating, we think of officials who like to make the game about them. So I think there's this idea that, like Ben said, ideally that these guys are like, "Oh, just let them play and whatever." But like, if you have games that you don't approach with, we know what these teams have done to each other. We know how they play each other. You know, I'm not saying you go out there like ready to issue yellow cards right away, but you know what you're in for, and you know what's going to happen. And the fact that you're not trying to take control, it's not about making the game about them, it's about taking control of the match. Like, you can't tell me that
teams play a football match.
Exactly. You can't tell me that, you know, the referees going into like West Ham Millwall don't, you know, approach that match differently. And I'm not saying Spurs Chelsea is that level of like game that needs control, but you know, I mean, you want to make this game at least a game and not, you know, two teams just fucking kicking each other for 90 minutes. And that's not exactly what happened today, but it wasn't too far off.
Yeah, I think a couple early yellows on, you know, players like Lamella or Conte or Luiz, like, that settles things down a little bit more. And it's not like he would have had to invent opportunities to give those cards to players for either team. Like,
exactly.
Like, he just didn't give them.
And there's things that, there's enough things going on that you could have just
were fouls, and things that should have been fouls were just ignored. And so it's just like, all right, you can call this game a little tighter, dude.
He could have just made, I mean, there's enough borderline shit. He could just pick something just to make a point. I mean, you know, this isn't hard.
But I think also, let's not lose sight of the fact that, like, we weren't very good, and Kieran Trippier
you know, should go to The Hague.
Or whatever the Hobbit equivalent of The Hague is.
Gondor? I don't know. Anyway.
I mean,
not as well versed in the,
like, I mean, the goal we conceded, the real goal, was atrocious. And then the second goal was a fucking war crime.
I mean, it's so inexcusable. Christ. No, that second goal is completely inexcusable. And, like, as bad as Lloris was on it, and he was bad, that is, you know, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, like, Trippier was telling him to come out for it, telling Lloris to come out for it, and he kicks it where he would have been if he hadn't told it to him. I mean, it's just, like, it's completely, I mean, they still had a chance, Spurs still had a chance to get something out of that game. I know we don't draw teams, but we could have gotten a point out of this game at that point in the match, and, you know, that game just, that stupid move just put the game completely beyond us. And I don't know, our fullbacks have been fucking terrible for years now, and we need to replace both of them. But I mean, I know Trippier offers some stuff going forward, but Jesus Christ, like, if he's going to be doing shit like that at the back, I don't care. Like, we need to get somebody else in here for right back.
Yeah, I really don't see how that own goal is that much of Lloris's problem. I mean,
Kieran Trippier, he did the hands down gesture while the ball was rolling across him, and that gesture means I'm leaving it for you, the goalkeeper. And that's why Hugo came out, because Trippier signaled to him that he was letting it run, and then Trippier realized it wasn't running fast enough for Hugo to get to it, so he put his foot through it. But he never looked back up and saw where Hugo was. It's entirely Kieran Trippier's fault.
And I mean, there's plenty of other things you can do at that point. Like, I think if he shields the attacker off of that, that Lloris probably still gets to it, or the ball gets into Lloris's the box in time for Lloris to pick it up. But, like, there's plenty of other options other than to make that risky back pass right there.
Right, I mean, just play out of touch. Like,
just play it.
You know, it's like, Trippier's got a lot of problems. And if he's going to get, like, burned by a speed merchant, that's, like, one thing. I don't love it, and there should be things we can do about that. But he is what he is, and that's one thing. But to make an unforced error like that, you know, even if he realizes, oh, this isn't moving fast enough, I got to do something else, like, there are safer things to do with the ball than that. And you cannot do something like that at that point in the match. I mean, at all, but especially at that point in the match.
Yeah. What was the last match? I remember when Kieran Trippier, like, played the ball into the middle of the park. I think it was against Arsenal. And just, like, fed them the ball. And Arsenal played, like, a through ball to Aubameyang. And they scored. It's just like, he's a fucking moron. It's honestly what it comes down to. Like,
well, it's if you're not aware
of what's going around him on the pitch, like, you just can't play that pass. Like,
yeah, if you're not, you need to be smarter than that. We're a top four team. We are in theory challenging for titles, trying to win things. We're playing in the Champions League. You got to be smarter than that.
Yeah, he's not. He's a moron, and he needs to fucking get the fuck out of our team.
I mean, honestly, every fullback on this team, with the exception of maybe Danny Rose, needs to be sent out to the glue factory. And, like, Danny Rose can't play more than, like, one game every 2 weeks, so we probably ought to replace him, too, as loath as I am to say that. I mean, hopefully he can get sort of fit over the summer so we can start using him more. But, I mean, this team needs to go buy three fullbacks, or at least two, and, like, roll the dice with Walker Peters.
Right, I mean, to go back to the Burnley game, like, Serge Aurier had a fucking nightmare.
Serge Aurier is directly responsible for us losing that game, so I guess he kept our undrawable streak alive, so maybe you do want us to keep him, Ben, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a hero. But yeah, I mean, it's maddening to see this team, you know, go an entire year without making a signing, and besides the actual holes we have, like, in midfield, where we have to play Moussa Sissoko every fucking week, we have known our fullbacks are bad for, like, 3 years now? How long has it been since that Danny Rose, Kyle Walker, best fullbacks in England season?
This is our second full season. Second full season without both of those guys. Like,
I'm like, We knew this was a weakness. We knew this was something we had to address, and we just didn't.
You know what? I would even be fine with that if Spurs were like, you know what? We're going to go buy Ndombele or whoever for our midfield, so we're just going to have to make do at fullback for another year. Like, you know what? I could have lived with that. Like, but we didn't do that.
It's not like we've allocated our financial resources elsewhere and, you know, are constrained by financial realities that we can only buy so many players this summer. We're not buying anybody. We didn't buy anybody in January. We didn't buy anybody this summer. Like,
well, you know what's galling about all this? Here's what's galling about all this. So, A, we didn't buy anyone after a World Cup year, which, like, you can make some arguments maybe about squad construction or whatever, but there are pieces on this squad that should have been replaced a while ago. And then the last guy we did buy is Lucas Moura, who, putting whatever we think about his politics aside, like, that dude has, like, played his way out of, like, not just the starting lineup, but, like, I mean, Pochettino barely wants to use him anymore. He's, like, I mean, he's, like,
he
a fucking...
behind Fernando Llorente in the sub-pecking order, which is, like... Like, Fernando Llorente has been surprisingly useful lately, but, like, come on. If you're worse than Fernando Llorente, like, what is the fucking point of you?
I don't know if he's hurt or something, but I mean, he doesn't look good when we play him anymore. And maybe that's, like, partially on how Pochettino likes to use him. But, shit, like, I don't know. I want to send, like, half this team to the Glue Factory in the offseason and just buy new players. Like, and I'm obviously just kind of raw after two ugly losses and coming up on a game where I don't feel super great about it. But, I don't know. Like, we're not too far away from whooping the shit out of Borussia Dortmund, so I don't want to get too carried away. But I think these last two games, this game against Chelsea in particular, really underlines for me how much work Spurs have to do this summer. I mean...
Well, I mean, I think we talked about this before the show. I think if one of these two results had been slightly different, I think we'd all feel a little bit better about this.
Like, you win Burnley so you can lose today if you have to. Like,
yeah, and then it's just like, oh, well, all right, we lost to another, you know, top six team, and that's not good, and that's bad for the narrative of Pochettino's success against those teams. But... you know, it's one game, but now it's two games, and, you know, we lost to Ginger Mourinho and, you know, a Chelsea team that should be falling apart, and, yeah, that doesn't feel great.
Especially going into a game against a resurgent Arsenal on the weekend, who, the last time we played them, when they were in a very down period and we were in a very up period, we fucking lost anyway. So... you know, we were talking, you know, a week ago about, are we really in a title challenge? Let's not be silly. But, like, the idea of missing out on top four was nonsensical. I mean, we had a very strong cushion. You know, we were playing decently well.
No, we were playing well. We just whipped the shit out of Borussia Dortmund. Like,
I think we were something like, at this time last week, we were at something like 92 or 94% for the top four. And I think someone dropped in our writer's room chat that we're now down to like 84, 85, 86%. Like,
yeah, which, again, feels optimistic. If we lose to Arsenal on Saturday, we are now in third place, 1 point ahead of Arsenal in fourth, and 2 points ahead of Man U in fifth.
Assuming Manchester United wins.
Yeah, I don't know who they're playing, but they've been winning a lot of games lately. So I'm not... assuming that they're not going to, but you know, that's one loss away from falling out of top four, and it's just unacceptable.
It's really frustrating, and I mean, what drives me completely insane about this is, like, you know, this would be more understandable if this was coming off of like, oh god, look at our fixture congestion, look at how screwed we are. But, like, we had fucking, like, 13 days off or some shit. It felt like that long after we played Dortmund, between that and the Burnley game. And, like, somehow getting, like, almost 2 weeks of rest, like, doesn't make a lick of fucking difference for this team.
I don't know. And then I guess the thing we haven't really touched on, obviously, is Harry Kane is now back. And a lot of this most recent run of success has been... you know, without him and with Heung-min Son sort of as the focal
point. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of a drop-off up top, but I think Kane's looked pretty up for it. I mean, he doesn't look completely sharp, but this doesn't look like last year.
I don't think it's Kane that's holding us back. I do think that we've certainly altered the way we are playing with him back, and especially against Burnley, I think it kind of came back to bite us. Even though Kane scored, you know, the only goal, and Kane had a good shot early in that match that could have been a goal, and you know, so I don't know. I'm not saying we shouldn't play Harry Kane. That's absolutely ludicrous. But I just think, like, after having such a good run without him and getting a good feel for what this team was without him, maybe we're having kind of growing pains with, like, reintroducing him.
I mean, we have won every game we've played this season without Harry Kane in the Premier League.
Which clearly we need to sell Harry Kane.
But rushing him back and, you know, not really accounting for the difference in how we play with Harry Kane and Heung-Min Son at striker. Those are two different things.
Those are two different things. It doesn't. I mean, I don't know, Ben. Do you disagree? It doesn't seem like this does not look like. Maybe in my head, when I think of rushback Harry Kane, I think of how he looked last year, and
yeah, it doesn't look like a shadow of himself. Like Harry Kane looks fine.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of rust there, but he more or less looks, especially in the Burnley match, he was creating chances.
Right, and he scored a good goal against Burnley, whatever. But I think, like, the way we learned how to play without him was better than just shoving him back on the team and just assuming it would work out because he's a good player. I don't know. I think something about the structure of the team has fallen away a little bit with reintegrating him that Pochettino hasn't tweaked into shape yet.
I don't know.
And I think the other underrated part of this is how much we're really missing Dele Alli at this point in the season.
And I agree. I think against Chelsea in particular, that was really evident.
Yeah, because, I mean, you talk about the 3-1 that we had against Chelsea earlier in the season. And why was that match notable? It was because, you know, Chelsea had been on a great run, and then Dele Alli marked Jorginho out of that game, and we gave everybody the blueprint on how to beat Chelsea. And in this match, we used Eric Lamella to not actually try to man mark Jorginho out of the game, but who was nominally sort of filling in the Dele Alli role. And as much as I love Eric Lamella, like, it's kind of obvious how severe the drop off in, you know, talent and overall product is from him, from Dele Alli to him. And, you know, we're without him and without Alli and without Alli and Eriksen to be able to kind of alternately occupy the free eight role, we're really kind of pigeonholing Eriksen back into the midfield. And that's also hurting us, I think. I think when those two have a little more fluidity, that helps us link with Kane a lot better. And so with Kane coming back in and us having to relearn how to do that, and Alli still being out, I think that's causing us a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem that I think we don't talk about enough, because, again, it's been charming to see him not be totally shit, but Musa Sissoko is terrible at football.
Like, yeah, I'm done with him.
He's fucking bad. He has been very bad for a while now. And, you know, like against Burnley, Christian Eriksen had to drop into midfield basically as like a full-time center midfielder just so we could move the ball to our forwards in a game where Burnley was like mostly behind the ball. And the fact that we couldn't progress the ball into our own final third without him sacrificing, you know, his position up top is a crime. I mean, Burnley gave us everything, and it took Christian Eriksen retreating into midfield before we could actually attack them. Yeah. And again, he had to do the same thing against Chelsea, where we couldn't move the ball through midfield today. I mean, every attack we had that was semi-good was either because Christian Eriksen dropped into midfield and like made the ball happen, or we just bypassed midfield completely and hoped Heung-min Son or Harry Kane could do something magical on their own. You know, it's just not a workable midfield. Harry Winks, as much as I like him and I'm rooting for him, he isn't good enough to compensate for Sissoko's obvious deficiencies.
Not having a midfield partner.
Right, like you play with Eric Dier, and like maybe I can see like Harry Winks can carry that burden, and you know, like he drops his shoulder well and makes a good run, he passes the ball vertically, you know, like he can do things, but he can't do them on his own. And like Musa Sissoko has to spend 80% of his time covering the right back zone behind Kieran Trippier, and we're left with a one-man midfield. It's.
I mean, I think you're right, Ben.
It's a mess.
We've talked about this all season, and you know, we are basically replacing our starting midfield with of Dier and Dembele with Sissoko and Winks, and those are obviously two downgrades. And as good as Winks has been in the last month or two, and he's certainly improved from where he was in November and the beginning of December when he wasn't doing any defensive actions and he wasn't really doing any midfield things other than passing the ball fairly safely. You're right. Sissoko is a problem, but this has been a problem all year. Like, Wanyama is obviously broken. Dier has every disease known to man. You know, like it's there needs to be other ways to address this. And you know, we addressed it early in the season by kind of going like the full air raid offense where we just bypassed midfield and didn't worry about it. And then we addressed it while Kane was out by having Eriksen drop deeper, and now we're doing some kind of weird mix of the two, and that didn't really work. I just, you know, look, I don't hate Sissoko as much as I probably did earlier in the season, and maybe that's a failing on my part, but he's been mostly okay. Like his main failing is that he's not amazing.
Good.
I mean, he's just like,
look, there's a world in which if Sissoko is like your third or fourth midfielder, it's probably you're doing okay.
I mean, the thing is he is our third or fourth midfielder. The problem is that we're having to play him.
Yeah. Well, my point is if he is in actuality your third or fourth midfielder, if you're bringing him in for rotation or like some late sub to clog up the midfield, fine, whatever. You know what? We threw way too much money at him. We probably can't get rid. Well, I don't know. Maybe we can't get rid of him because people seem to think he's good now. But it's just like it is what it is. But Ben's right. Like this guy's not good enough to be starting. Like getting the kind of minutes he's getting for us this year at a team as good as we want to be.
I mean, you know, yeah. But I mean, the only way that he isn't getting these kind of minutes is if we had signed anybody ever, and that's not a thing that we do anymore.
Actually, I have another thing I want to be mad about. I don't understand why we didn't play a back three today. Like, we've had pretty good success with it. It didn't quite work against Burnley, but honestly, it worked. We were better against Burnley with a back three before we took out a defender to add another attacker. That's when we lost.
I think if you're looking for justification, it's because that the 4-3-3 against a back three is not an ideal matchup. What you want is the 4-3-3 against two strikers, because then you have the extra man.
Yeah, but that's
the 4-3-3 against the back three against the 4-3-3. You then have the outside center backs getting pulled out of position by guys like you know, the wide forwards, Pedro and
I'm gonna just tell you that's horseshit. Like, the idea of the formation matchups and, you know, having a back three is only good against two strikers, and against one striker it's not good. I'm just going to tell you that that's nonsense.
I mean, I'm not saying that's commonly accepted, you know, football tactical thing. I didn't pull that out of my ass.
No, you didn't. And I think, you know, the logic of it's good against two strikers because three center backs versus two strikers is good, and three center backs against one striker is somehow bad. Like, it doesn't actually make sense when you unpack it, right? Like, the idea is two strikers versus three center backs. You have one center back on each striker and a spare man, okay? But when you have three center backs against one striker, then you have one striker against one center back, and then the other two center backs fuck with the wingers. But that's not necessarily how that has to operate, you know? Like, you could keep one of your wing backs, let's say Ben Davis, in reserve, and he can also cover, let's say, Eden Hazard or Willian or Pedro. Maybe Pedro had a good game today. You know, you keep Ben Davis in reserve on Pedro, and then you have, again, two center backs on Higuain, and then you have one center back covering over on Eden Hazard on the other side, plus the wing back covering on Eden Hazard. Like, there's no reason that three center backs means you have to be exposed.
Well, I mean, the other problem with it is that you're then also conceding control of midfield.
But you're not. I mean, if you add Juan Foyth to this game, who, yes, we know he has problems, but he's also the best player in the world.
Lucas Moura was early in the season?
Right. I mean, he's a guy who is comfortably stepping out into midfield to help cover midfield zones. You know, you don't have to overcommit your wingbacks just because you're playing a back three. You know, your wingbacks can also be primarily defensive, and you can call it a back five, and now suddenly that's, you know, what Stoke's playing 5 years ago or West Brom's playing, and you're tutting their overly defensive setup. You know, we don't have a good midfield. And when we're trying to match up Winks and Sissoko against Jorginho, Conte, and Kovacic, it's bad. But again, you add another center back into the mix because we don't have a midfielder, and suddenly the center of the park isn't as fragile. Like, I don't think this was a foregone conclusion that the midfield would be a loss to Chelsea's better midfield. I think you add an extra center back and we're better. I don't know how coherent that was. I'm very angry right now and kind of drunk. But
I think it goes back to what we've been talking about. Today feels like a real missed opportunity. I mean, today just feels like a missed opportunity. And I think as frustrating as it is and as inevitable as sort of fucking losing to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge can feel to me, at least sometimes. I mean, this was a winnable game, or at least a drawable game. I know you don't want to hear that.
No,
Ben,
we don't
draw
games.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, we compromised our back three that worked against Dortmund, that worked mostly against Burnley, to get Eric Lamela on the pitch. And frankly, Eric Lamela sucks shit.
Oof, oof. You're breaking my heart.
It's breaking my heart too, man. I love Eric Lamela, but you know, getting him on the pitch did not add anything, and putting that extra defender in place of him, I think, would have been better.
I mean, I think we're reaching the end of sort of Pochettino's magic grab bag of solutions to get around debilitating injuries, and I don't know. I hope we're building up karma for next season at least, but maybe we can avoid that by buying players. I don't know. Anyway.
That seems like wish casting to
me. It does. Speaking of wish casting, does anyone have any wishes for this weekend's game against Arsenal? Big North London derby coming up.
I wish that we will win.
Brian, you're bold man.
Yeah.
Ben, how are you feeling about this game?
Very bad. I mean, Arsenal just ripped Bournemouth 5-1 today.
I mean, I'm not sure how much I'd read into that, but
yeah, I mean, you know, not a lot, but the fact is Arsenal is playing pretty well, and we're playing pretty badly. So the last time we played Arsenal, we were playing pretty well, and Arsenal was playing pretty badly, and they still whipped the shit out of us. So I don't know. Maybe that means we're going to somehow win.
So you're not putting the reverse lock on it?
No, I'm fatalistic as fuck, and we're going to lose, and we're going to barely hold on to top four after this weekend, and it's all going to fall apart.
Oh, good. Well,
I'm melting down hard, Greg.
I mean, clearly, you should take a vacation.
I'm going to Charleston next weekend. That'll be nice.
Well, that will be nice.
Oh, you have to give me some recommendations. I'm going in April.
This is how we're going to cope with the rest of Spurs season. We're just going to talk about travel. So, sorry.
I recommend seafood.
Sorry, everyone. Wheeler Dealer Radio is a travel podcast.
Yeah, why not?
Why not, indeed?
It's got to be better than talking about Spurs.
These days, you're fucking right about that. Ben, any final thoughts for our listeners?
I mean, I'll say it is amazing how easily it is for that pendulum of optimism to swing towards like dire meltdown nonsense.
We completely played off the comfortable leaders of the Bundesliga off the pitch a few, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was. And then two games later, it's like, oh shit, we're going to be in the Europa League next year. I know those are overreactions on both sides, but fuck.
But we might be.
Oh, Brian, any thoughts? Any final thoughts for our listeners?
We almost definitely will not be in the Europa League next year. So take comfort in that.
Okay. Well, that's a weird note of optimism.
Because we'll finish eighth.
There we go. That's what I want to hear. I don't know. Tottenham's way of keeping Pochettino out of Manchester United is innovative, if nothing else.
Look, if we finish sixth and win the Champions League, I'm still happy with our season. So
good point.
Let's just do that.
I hadn't considered that possibility. Well, on that note, Brian, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y. And you can also always find me on LinkedIn, where I am, promoting my series of basketball camps at Brett Rainbow.
Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
And you can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. And of course, don't forget to check out my now pornography free Tumblr at Brett Rainbow. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I'm your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.